Welcome to session 222, narrow session. We just want to remind you to turn your cell phones off and go right ahead. Introduction for our speakers. The presenter is Robert Rees, teaches Mormon studies at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley. He's a former editor of Dialogue and former chair of the Sunstone Board. He's currently working on a project on the American Renaissance and editing a collection of essays on the Book of Mormon. His Why I Stay, The Challenges of Discipleship for Contemporary Mormons was published in 2011. He's on the board of the Leah Home Children's Foundation, which provides nutrition and education for undernourished children living in Central and South America. He has an interest in Mormon Midrash, or imaginative theology. One such work, The Prodigal Daughter, will appear in Parables for Today, 2012. Our respondent is going to be Greg Robinson, a nephew of Mitt Romney. He's the co-chair for the Utah of the National Finance Committee for Romney for Presidency, and elected delegate to the Republican Convention. He's a vice president and wealth advisor with Wells Fargo Private Bank in Salt Lake City.
Thank you very much. Milton spoke of making a presentation to what he called a fit audience of a few. So we'll consider this a fit audience and hope that others join us. 4 years ago at the Sunstone Symposium, I made a presentation as Governor Romney was doing his first national bid for candidacy, that election, and the primary season, and I followed Governor Romney's career, as it were, in national politics since then, reading widely on in various media, and as someone who teaches literature and who's been very interested in the way irony, satire is used, I've always been interested in political cartoons as a way to understand or get insight into a particular either person or a movement or a political party or a particular campaign. And one of the things that we know about political cartoons is that all of us are interested in them. Generally, people, at least I would say men, read the sports page and then they look for the political cartoon on the editorial page. Not necessarily to read anything, but to get a quick look at whatever's going on. One of the interesting things about the history of political cartoons is that it's a very old history, either as cartoons or doing the thing that political cartoonists do, which is to find ways of exposing certain things about a party, an opponent, a movement, using the obvious distortions that one sees in political cartoons or in certain kinds of satire, so that political cartoons are not meant to be fair. They are meant to be funny, and sometimes are. They almost always use the elements of distortion, ridicule, stereotype in order to make a point, which you will see examples of that. The political cartoonist is actually related to the Iron in Greek tragedy. There are three kind of stock characters. One was the Iron, or Iron, depending on how you want to say that. But the function of the Iron was to be able to unmask the character who thought of himself as being awfully important, or perhaps too important, or certainly more important than he deserved to be, which could probably be said of all politicians, at least at some point in their career. and then for some of them, a lot of time in their career. The whole idea is to try and make a kind of unmasking, as it were, of a person who is being presented either by himself or herself or a political party into something that is perhaps ideal or something beyond what they might actually be, which is in a sense true of all human beings. We all try to present ourselves in the best light that we can be seen, and sometimes our wives or husbands or children unmask us when we aren't particularly prepared for such unmasking. And that's one of the things that that happens with political cartoons. Yesterday in a session I was involved in called Anti-Mormonism in the Current Political Campaign, we had a very interesting panel discussion. Some of you were there. Patrick Mason, the Howard Hunter Chair in Mormon Studies at Claremont Graduate University, has just written a book called The Mormon Menace, Anti-Mormonism in Postbellum South, a couple of years ago. And what Patrick was doing in that book and in his comments yesterday was talking about other members of the panel were talking about the persistence of anti-Mormonism in American culture. It seems to me, in one of the comments I said, one of the remaining acceptable prejudices to have, that things that are being said, written about, portrayed about Mitt Romney and Mormons would not be, if you just were to put other groups, Jews or Catholics or whatever, within the context, very often people would find that offensive when they don't find anti-Mormonism offensive, or the kinds of portrayal. Well, I think one of the questions we looked at yesterday in that session is all of this ultimately good or bad for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and for Mormon culture and for us as individual members of the Church? And I think that, or individuals who are very involved in the culture of Mormonism. And I think it's like most things, it's too early to say exactly what all of this will mean. There are some people, I think, who have been dismayed that the Church and Mormonism is getting so much exposure and in the Mormon moment, which some people characterize as the weird Mormon moment or the moment of weird Mormons. Other people see it as a very positive thing, that people are talking about Mormons, that it's giving many opportunities for people to see and understand things about the Church that would never have happened had it not been for the Olympics, and had not been for the Book of Mormon musical, had it not been for Governor Romney and Governor Huntsman to be engaged in the political campaign for presidency. So it certainly, whether this becomes more than a Mormon moment, I think remains to be seen. But at least I think we can say we're in the moment. And when we're in a moment, sometimes it is very difficult to have the clearest view of what that moment means. I'm going to hook up my computer here to show some slides, if I can find the right connector here. What did I do with it?
Right behind there. Yeah, you got your hand on it.
Oh, here it is. Okay, thank you. Let me begin by saying also how delighted I am that my dear friend Greg Robinson, Mitt Romney's nephew, has generously and graciously agreed to be a respondent to this presentation. I first met Greg, his family moved to Los Angeles when I was bishop of the Los Angeles Singles Board, and it was just a wonderful thing to have his siblings in my ward and then Greg came home from his mission during that time and for a period of time he was there before he went back to school. And we've remained good friends ever since. And I'm just grateful to call him and his family among my best friends and a great admirer of the great clan of George Romney. As a grandfather myself, I would hope to have at least a small kind of influence that George Romney had on had and is continuing to have on his grandchildren. So, this is the first political cartoon to appear in the United States. Benjamin Franklin's political cartoon about the division of the different states and trying to present an idea as to what would happen if they didn't come together to unite, that they would be like this snake. A much simpler kind of cartoon. I have one more, which is Thomas Nast's a cartoon that shows the kind of vulture politician, and this is a word that we're hearing now in relation to Governor Romney and vulture capitalism, but what this illustrates is the extent to which one political cartoonist, there are no rules. So a political cartoonist can do just about anything that he or she wants. So what I've done today is I've gone through many hundreds of political cartoons and tried to select some that would give you some indication of the kinds of ways that Mitt Romney is being portrayed these days. Some of these you will have seen, probably some not, and I've tried to divide them into categories, although sometimes a political cartoonist is satirizing more than one thing at a time. I selected one from the 2008 Mormon cartoonists seem to have particular fun with a Mormon politician. But of all of the ones that I did last time, I thought this was one of the funnier ones. And I'll show some of the ones that pick up on the idea of using Mormonism in with regard to Mitt Romney. So one of the first series has to do with how the primary campaign. So Mitt Romney now is in competition with Santorum and Cain and Gingrich and all the other people who were that group of people. It seemed to me if you want a group of people that you're going to be involved in, you're going to be in a campaign with, that would be an ideal group of people because they can continue to self-destruct as the things went on. But here was the polite Governor Romney offering chocolates while Santorum is making out with everyone. part of the thing that Romney is being satirized the protest for is heading for the riot, and then as soon as and there are many people who believe that Governor Romney is, as of perhaps necessity, had to move further to the right than his instincts would naturally lead him. That is, many people feel he's more of a moderate than a right-wing politician, and so once all of the right-wing politicians pulled out, maybe there was some opportunity for him to swing closer to the center. This is people occupying Occupy Romney out of the autumn. I mean, part of the thing, of course, that Governor Romney has had to contend with, as Greg really knows well, is all of the criticism of him that came out of the Republican primary campaign that now the Democrats are using against Romney, which it's always the risk of primary campaigns. Yeah. An easy choice. Kane had an affair with Snooki, Kim Kardashian, and Kim Kardashian Gingrich is a retainer of Rand in Syria. Perry fell asleep during the last debate. Bachman is in contact with extraterrestrials. Apologists call for the exhumation of Ayn Rand. Santorum is arrested for grand theft auto. And Huntsman is defected to China. And you're still stuck at 25%.
It's time to eat your vegetables.
So then he makes it through the primary, so now this is Mitt's relationship to the Republican Party, which has often been the subject of satire. Part of the thing that happens in any political cartoon is that certain things get attached to you no matter what. I thought so much when we were doing the program yesterday and thought about this during this presentation. In the Book of Mormon, it talks about those who take advantage of one because of his words. Boy, if there was ever a context in which people are taken advantage of because of their words, it's in a political campaign. I tried to think about what would happen if someone walked around behind me for a year with a microphone and all the things that it reminds me of when our oldest daughter was young and our oldest son was born. And I walked into a room one day and Jennifer, who was three, was going like this to Bobby, who was two, and I said to my wife, Ruth, I said, where in the world did she get that? And she said, where do you think? I said, do I do that? She said, yeah, you do that a lot. Something like this could make a lesser fellow question his inevitability. Met at Hooters. One of the problems, I think, with any political campaign, I'm sure Greg would, since he's very intimately involved in the campaign here in Utah, vouch for, is that not only do you have to be accountable for everything you say and everything your family says, but you also have to be accountable for all of the people in your party, even though you are embarrassed sometimes and want to disassociate yourself from them, someone will invariably give you something that Rush Limbaugh has just said and ask for your comment, which it seems to me puts you often in an impossible place. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Whoa, slow down there, Padre. Let's give it a few more minutes.
Look at that smile.
Honey, you seem distant from me. Is there someone else?
There's a guy.
This is awesome because it'll make me stronger. We were wondering if you might have Where's Dumbo? I'm conservative, I'm skeptical, I'm severely conservative, severely clinically, debilitatingly, compulsively, traumatically, pathologically conservative. Still skeptical? Severely. part of the problem, of course, is that in any political party, you've got such polar opposites, and so trying to, whether it's Democrat or Republican, trying to be in a party in which they're many people are saying, well, if you take this stand, we won't vote for you. If you take that stand, we won't vote for you. And it would seem, I mean, I know I could never be a politician because it would seem to me so impossible to be able to make all of those judgments.
Oh,
Yeah. Anyone here, for whatever reason, everybody's raising that. Romney 2012, what the heck? And this, even at the, as he's being sworn in as president, still hoping there's someone else in the race. So, one of the other groups of cartoons are those dealing with myth and Mormonism. So this kind of thing is inevitable. Romney the Mormonator using the magic to pass the screw of the future. Yeah. Romney pointing to all the past, you know, what you said, you know, lots of go with anything you guys said.
Oh, say. The logo font at the bottom left.
Oh yes, the candidates say Mitt Romney of lightly held stances. This obviously a play. This is something you we see in the Romney presidency, the unfolding of prophecy, make the whole world Mormon. That's off the record. that's of course the one of the things that the evangelicals feel is that you get a. I mean, we were talking last night in yesterday's session about this, about the redneck. Person someplace in the middle of Mississippi who is looking at this black Muslim from Kenya and this Mormon cultist from Utah. You know, what do I do? Is this America that I'm faced with this kind of a choice?
Stackle stupid.
Looks like we've got the big MO and for November, momentum, but that's great, Mormon. One of the things that the political cartoonists play upon, of course, is this idea about how other religions see this. You know, so you've got Mitt being the super missionary and Huntsman over there, kind of probably not out eagerly proselytizing. Okay, we Mormons, it's some evolving on marriage too. As he's talking about is evolving on the question of same-sex marriage. If I elected, I promise to put a chicken in every pot and a Book of Mormon on every shelf. And this becomes the kind of more extreme things. We talked last night, one of the things I talked about was Lawrence O'Donnell's virulent anti-Mormonism. And in his MSNBC, The Last Word, and in one of his programs, he showed a picture of Anne and Mitt in garments, and with that is their names actually, or their faces pasted onto a couple. And you know, it seems to be the lapsing into that. As I'm thinking of writing an essay on the whole question of the weird or secret underwear, because it's a topic that's very difficult to talk about, but also it seems to me, and the title of my essay is called "Is Nothing Sacred," because this to do this to things that other religions hold sacred, it seems to me would be quite unlikely.
Do that essay. Do it.
So you've got Mitt as a fundamentalist polygamist with his. Vice President candidates. My dream ticket, Romney, Ryan, Rubio, Christie. Boy game, magic underwear, hit Broadway musical, dogs trapped to wagons, baptizing to do black skin curse. For now, I might not leave with what do you know about the Mormon Church. TMI, too much information. Jesus objected to dead baptisms. Oy vey, the president of the church is saying. Okay. One of the things that the political cartoonists cannot stay away from is the whole thing of Mitt Romney being indecisive, in changing from one position to another, and the whole question flip-flopping, which was part of, as we remember, the 2008 presentation was a big part of that as well. So that's one of the things. And of course, these journalists are great plagiarizers, so they pick up the idea from other people. And so this gets out. It's like a couple of others, I'm sure, that are kind of ad nauseum showing Mitt Romney trying to be all things to all people, high plains drifter. At a Waffle House.
We didn't finish the last one.
Oh, you didn't excuse me. Okay, I'll be back.
Waffle House.
I'm Waffle.
In the South.
Oh. You got the chameleon. So, I talked before about Nephi talking about one of the things that talked about lying, stealing, taking advantage of one because of his neighbor. And it seems to me that that is one of the most difficult things. You've seen this just recently with what happened with President Obama making a sort of statement about business and being dependent on others, and so taking that and making something out of it. People have done that a great deal with some of the things that Mitt said. I mean, you think of politicians, probably 1% of the things that he says become the fodder for this kind of political cartooning. I enjoy the cheesy grits. And again, part of the problem, you think about it, you go around the country and you have to you have to have your advanced people tell you what kind of language to use. And I remember this very well from when I was a student at BYU, and we often would get presidential candidates coming to BYU, and you could always tell who had done careful advance work. Because if the politician stood up and said, I love your people and your religion. Yesterday I was at up at the church office building talking to David McKay. If you left the O out,
yeah. You
knew somebody had done a very careful job of saying, one was always put the middle initial in. So, or to make some other kind of faux pas. "23 Skidoo Groovy, that's the bee's knees." cultivating the youth that I'm trying to be. "After months of looking at the menu, we finally decided to have a Romney." Wait. So, this idea that a Romney now is becoming part of the language. That's the main kick. I made a Romney. "Corporations are people, and I should know since I've laid off thousands of corporations." the whole idea. Nice out of work if you can get it. There's Trump and Romney with their bumper stickers.
That's great.
And Obama being delighted to be able to pick up these things. That would take time, but it's taking all of these things and putting them into this. I am the 1%. So what this does, of course, is pick up all of the $10,000 bet, the whole the corporations of people, all of this, and put them into something that suggests that he's out of touch. "I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure that what you heard is necessarily what I meant. I'm not familiar precisely with what I said, but I stand by what I said, whatever it was." This is one of the things that he had said when someone asked him about something. He said he stood behind him, and of course, then to take that and then finally say it's a session. Mitt being out of touch is one of the other motifs, leitmotifs that one finds in political cartoons. Again, it's an easy, and part of the thing is that every politician is an easy mark for certain kinds of satire and certain kinds of charges. And so if you have somebody who is a graduate from Harvard, is a wealthy person who comes from kind of a distinguished family, owns several houses, etc., that becomes an immediate way to portray somebody as being out of touch with the rest of the world. And so, no minders, scheduling your every waking minute, free to come and go as you please. Yes, friend, I can tell you, you're living the dream. Courage, citizen. I, too, know the despair of unemployment and the shame of living off dividends. I'm getting hammered about the low tax rate on my gazillion. See, I've got my money troubles, too. Pardon me, do you have any Grey Poupon? Keep in mind that a successful political cartoon is successful essentially by the extremity of distortion or the using of stereotypes. Now, the $10,000 debt became one of those things that, it seems to me that you have to have so much empathy for any political person who is just so vulnerable to anything. I mean, no one can edit or prepare for or anticipate all of the questions or situations that are going to come at you sometimes with rapid fire. So obviously all of us are going to say things that we think, as my late wife reminded me that I often did. She reminded me of the things I said that were inappropriate. And sometimes even said, you're going into the situation, Mom, be careful about what you say. She knew me well. Hi folks, I'm Mitt Romney. I'm working on connecting personally with voters. Hey, that meal looks delicious. Did your chef cook that, or did you have it catered? It's that, you know, George Romney Sr. had this problem when he went into a supermarket and was surprised to find that there were scanners there, because apparently he had never been shopping himself. The whole question about money, they're dangerous and it must remain locked up, never be released. But enough about my tax returns. Often, you know, taking a word and playing on it. I was questioning how I made my millions, hate capitalism, and made off the same. Why didn't I think of that? I'm number one, and someone's holding up the percent sign behind it. Came in corporate cabanas, just relax, sir, and forget that class envy talk. The God particle is easy. Finding how Romney goes back in time to retroactively retire from Bain is the real challenge. Here you take the Constitution, the Mormon, the Constitution by a thread, and Romney's. Mid in the right wing. This is, I showed this one before, but the discrepancy between here you've got, he just wants you to rub his tummy, and the evangelical Republicans ignoring him. Strain at a mitt, cultist, and swallow camels, all of these other kind of extreme right wing comments. Wait, you must accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and personal Savior before you save us from Obama, which is certainly a lot of fun. This is, of course, the pastor from Jeffrey from the Baptist Church. This is an old joke, but it's kind of fun when it's played on him. Romney doing a Tim Tebow. I love this one. Mighty glad we won't be around to see Romney in the White House. Them Mormons believe in some crazy things. Yep, Pastor, are you sure the rapture's coming today? Because I'm getting kind of hungry.
Snake battling.
Wow.
This one, of course, is Gail Collins. He writes a column for the New York Times. Every column has something about Mitt Romney and his dog.
Go, Benson, go.
And again, it's a kind of thing that can be so distorted, as often happens in families, I can tell you. So it's a 99%. The SPCA is on the United States. The GOP is on that. And the Romney himself is put on there. Muslim when we get on the main road. We finally got that tied down. Mastodon. He asked Dad to show his tax returns. I love it. I spent years doing surveillance undercover work, but why? You think I've forgotten how he strapped my cousin to the roof of the station wagon? Are you saying I got Romney's tax returns? This is cute. I wonder what kind of a dog Romney will have when in the White House he gets elected. A Latter-day Saint. But you have the same thing with Etch-a-Sketch, which again is done ad nauseum. I'm going to go through these rather quickly. Just playing on this, and the Republican Party using Etch-a-Sketch, which still comes up Romney. And Romney shaking the voter. How do you make this darn thing work, sir? I believe that's called a person.
Oh.
And there's just a number of other things. Obviously a family is going to get a lot of this. It's probably hard to be a stay-at-home mom when you have so many homes. So poor Ann Romney gets pulled in, as do the cousins. Greg's five cousins who have been criticized for not being in the military, and the play on that, getting in in a car with Trump and corporations, dad too, so instead of mom or Mary or whatever, he's being tattooed with these. Join Latinos from Romney, prove it. And here's me in 2008 giving thumbs up to the auto industry bailout. Romney clearly knows more about foreign policy than data, and I can see Canada from my house in New Hampshire. I can see Europe from my house in Massachusetts, and Mexico from my house. Some of these, by the way, I share that one. Some of these really border on what, to me, gets close to being cruel. But here's one that I was talking about, distortion. So Obama says, I no longer smoke. There's a crack in the Oval Office wall, things will improve with Castro gone. And Romney's campaign saying, I smoke crack in the Oval Office with Castro. Edited slightly for clarity. I wanted to close with a couple of ones that instead of satirizing Mitt Romney, show him a better light. So, the ghost of President's past, Ronald. The ghost of President's future, Mitt. Merry Christmas. Same thing with Trick or Treat. Romney's giving him the pink slip. There's a treat for America. Happy Halloween. And then Mitt of Steel. Nice try. Flip-flopper, rhino. All of these things we've just seen bouncing off of him like he's Superman. And then finally, the countdown to the presidency with the Obama's logo finally crashing. Happy New Year, President. Romney 2012. So that's a selection of cartoons, and obviously there are a number of them that are multiple. There's some Doonesbury and others that I would have liked to have shown. They're kind of multiple ones, five or six different ones at once. This will give you a flavor of this. And having seen the distortion of these cartoons, we'll now invite somebody who has grown up with Niven Nosing Well to talk to us.
Great. This isn't on, I don't think.
Is that on?
Why don't you go ahead and go up there?
Okay.
Well, thanks for coming. I, like you, enjoyed those. I haven't seen most of them. In fact, I don't think I've seen hardly any of those. But as you might imagine, when you're a family member and you love dearly the person and you know him well, as I've known him for 50 years, the person that that is portrayed in the media every day, you try and stay away from most of that stuff. That you don't find it very helpful. Mitt, for me, is a person. I was born in 1960 when Mitt was 14. Actually 13 and a half, to be precise. And something that you ought to know about me, this is a very personal detail, and you're just meeting me for the first time, but my dad left the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints when I was a missionary. He was excommunicated at the beginning of my mission. I happened to serve in France like Mitt did. And this is just a little bit, just a snippet of the impact that Mitt's had on my life. So when I was sealed in the L.A. Temple the night before, the day before, without being asked, Mitt not only decided to come out from Boston for the wedding, but he came a day early and spent several hours with me, helping me as a dad would do, because my dad wasn't around in my life. Helped me prepare for marriage, helped me think through finances, helped me think through the wedding night and how to treat women. And it was a very, very significant thing for me that my uncle would take that kind of time out of his busy life. At the time, he was, I don't know what church calling he had, but he seemed to always have responsibilities outside the home as well as in his church and in the community that were very important along with having five young boys. So that's the kind of person that Mitt is, and Mitt would never talk about that. Of course, it's uncomfortable for any of us to talk about things that we've done that are kind or good, or right, because it looks like we're being self-aggrandizing, and if there's one thing Mitt is, it's self-effacing. Mitt is incredibly self-effacing. If I can say so, it's almost to a fault. It's like Mitt, we get it. He's always trying to knock himself down and trying to build other people up. That's the way that he is when you're interacting with him, which is, I think, unusual for someone of his accomplishment. Oftentimes when you're around people, as I've had the occasion to be, who have been successful in life, they tend to like to showcase that. And it's just the opposite. So, but it is true that, and it's wonderful that we live in this free country where we have the freedom of press and where we can explore these issues. And, one of the things that strikes me as we look at these cartoons, which, all of them have an element of, I don't know if I want to say truth to them, but they certainly have an element of observation about Mitt's life. That, as Bob has correctly pointed out, the cartoonist is trying to amplify for humor, and to make a point. But I think it's helpful because Mitt does have blind spots. Mitt's really not a politician, but he has to run for office because that's the way our political system is structured. The comment that he made just before he left for London reminded me of that. He was asked by the press what his opinion was of London's preparations for the Olympic Games. The problem was, it wasn't Mitt Romney, the politician, who answered the question. It was the real Mitt Romney, the one who was trained at Harvard Business School and Harvard Law School, and who's analytical, and who's bright, and who's run the Olympics himself. So he answered honestly. He said, well, it's too early to tell how well they prepared. There have been some issues raised and some concerns about security, and he kind of went through two or three things that have been talked about in the press when people have said, well, gosh, is London really ready to handle the Olympic Games? But what happened to Met as a result of those honest observations was that all of a sudden the media just trounced him, right, for criticizing England on the eve of his trip to London. And he wasn't criticizing them, he was simply raising issues. So that he had to turn right around as soon as he got to England and met with the Prime Minister Cameron and praise the Olympics and praise the preparation. And he's been nothing but almost overly positive ever since then. But those are the kinds of things that, a normal citizen, right, if we don't answer honestly a question, we think that we're not being forthcoming and straight. But in this position, he actually can't really afford to do that. He always has to take every question and filter it through and say, well, what are the political ramifications of how I might answer this? So it's interesting, he mentioned to us that in the primaries, really that whole contest was wagered on television through 26 presidential debates, primary debates. There were 26 of them, 55 hours. 55 hours of unscripted, any question, you have no idea what's going to come in next. Television. So, you know, when you think about it, you think about his $10,000 bet comment, which was obviously a big mistake, and other comments that he made that didn't quite fly, you think, well, gosh, 55 hours. He did okay. I mean, it was terrifying for him. Absolutely terrifying. He said the general election is a walk in the park compared to the primary election. The primary election was brutal. Here you are surrounded by your party and your people, and really the difference between the 12 or so candidates that actually mounted a campaign for president on the Republican side. The difference between them in their positions was negligible. And when you really think about it, I mean, particularly in some of the most salient issues. I mean, they're all for lower taxes. They're all for increasing job growth. They're all for restructuring the debt of this country and addressing entitlements. You know, they're all for clamping down on illegal immigration, but trying to provide ways to retain the talent that we have in this country, and for legal immigration, which has been the lifeblood of this country. You know, there's so many things where they just line up perfectly, and yet here they are trying to differentiate between one another. And so it ends up being a pretty difficult thing, and you never know what's going to come at you next. With Obama, the wonderful thing, I think, for us as part of the electorate and for Met, is that this is such a big, big gap. I mean, between President Obama's views and Mitt Romney's views on how to solve our country's problems, it's just there's an enormous, enormous gap. And it really comes down to our vision for, you know, how problems get solved and for America. One just side note that I thought you might enjoy. So whenever the dog thing comes up, it hits home for me because my mother is the one who leaked that story the last time it ran. Idea that it would be used against him. And the reason that she would have mentioned Seamus, the Irish setter, is because Seamus was my dog. Mitt was bringing Seamus to the Romney Cottage on Lake Huron in Ontario, Canada, to give him to me. And putting him in a crate on top of the car. By the way, let me tell you, Seamus was my dog for years through high school. Seamus loves the wind. I mean, it's his favorite thing. You roll that window down, maybe something. You're catching the wind in his face. So to be up there in that crate with holes in it, he loved that ride. He would have taken that over being in that cramped station wagon with the five boys any day of the week, I can assure you. And they pulled over multiple times. Seamus got out, ran around, did his thing. So it's pretty fun when you think about it, right? And here he is just bringing a dog out to give the dog to his nephew. And that ends up being 20 or whatever years later, some kind of political fire that is used against you.
When he finishes, then we'll have some questions.
Yeah, so I'll just wrap up real quick. I certainly am not here to advocate for him, although you'll never find a more ardent advocate of him than me. But that's not my purpose. Really what I want to do is give you some flavor from the inside, not only of the campaign, and Bob is correct, I'm one of the co-chairs in Utah, but really Utah politically is just a source of fundraising for that. I mean, Mitt's going to carry this state more than any other. So we won't see not one single political ad this entire campaign. All of the money that we're raising out of Utah will be spent in one of the 14 swing states, and that's where the election will be determined. And Mitt needs to win 6 of those states, as long as he wins the right ones, and he'll be the next president. So, but the frustrating thing right now, you might find this interesting. Obama's outspending us 5-1 in those swing states right now, because Obama he raised primary monies all through the primary that he didn't have to spend. We had to raise $95 million that was spent by the campaign to get through the primary season. Obama spent nothing. He didn't have an opponent. So he was actually, as you may recall, he was formulating and distributing ads against Mitt Romney, who they assumed early on was going to be their opponent during the primary season. And Mitt was busy trying to fend off his competition. So we spent that $95 million, and now we're out-raising Obama by a significant portion. We raised $55 million more than he did in the first 2 months after Mitt became the presumptive nominee, May and June. We believe we're going to continue to outraise him all the way through the election. But Mitt can't spend that money until August 30th. That's when he becomes the official nominee in Tampa at the Republican National Convention. So until he becomes the general election nominee, he can't spend that general money. So we're stockpiling it, but we can't spend it. So Obama's spending what he raised for the primary. And what's interesting to me is that for all of that spending, 5-1 in those swing states, it isn't moving the needle. Mitt's still within the margin of error in the national polls. He's down by 2 points, and it's a dead heat across those swing states. So it's going to be a very interesting 102 days that we have left of Hughes County, right? Between now and November 6th. And I really believe that if those of us who are trying to help Mitt do our part, he will be the next president. I don't think that Mitt will stumble to an extent that'll become a detriment. I think, you know, he's not a perfect candidate. But he would be a great president, and he needs all the help he can get. So anyway, those are some thoughts and some observations. I'll finish, and we can open up to questions.
Come and sit over here.
Yeah.
So we have a few minutes for questions. I'll use that.
Is that on?
See. Should be on. Or you can.
Can we hand this one over?
Yeah.
This one? Either.
Yeah, let me hand this one over. You keep that one on.
I can use this one. Craig, thank you for coming. Thank you for making yourself vulnerable in this situation. I realize that you didn't have to come. Thank you for doing it. Now, and thank you for the first comment that you made, because I think it helped humanize. We are seeing a cartoon, right, all the time about Romney. And I think particularly the first comments about the mentoring and the personal relationship really helped humanize Romney. Now, when you say that the comments that Romney made on the Olympics was Romney speaking as a man and not as a politician, I don't believe that for a second. I think it's someone with intelligence, preparation, and tremendous determination to win the presidency that Romney has. I think that he was pandering to the Tea Party. I think that he was pandering to the gay community when he said that he would do more than Ted Kennedy for them. I think that he was pandering to Massachusetts when he said that he would change Massachusetts and create jobs. And I think that he was pandering to the evangelicals when he told them that he accepts Jesus as his personal savior. So, but thank you again for coming and for sharing this with us.
Go ahead, Bert.
So, can I come on to that? So, pandering is not a word I would ever use to describe that. So I have to tell you, I'm completely, 100% disagree with you. Mitt is not pandering. Mitt is a person of unbelievable principle. I would put his integrity against anybody I've ever known. So he's not a panderer. What he is, he is someone who's trying to serve his country. And you have to do that through the political process that we have. So is he phrasing things in a way to try and appeal to voters? Absolutely. He'd be an idiot if he didn't. But he does so within the margin of his personal beliefs and his principles, which are what drive him as a person, and he will never, ever let go of those principles.
One of the things that happened last night, someone asked a question to Patrick Mason about, is it possible for a politician to be in a campaign like this and not compromise? And Patrick said, I think it was Patrick who said, a campaign is a war. It's not, it is anything goes. The object is to win and defeat your opponent. And of course, one of the things that happens is that you've got a whole political party behind you, or with you, or against you, whatever, depending on that. And so there's so many things that happen. I think it's extremely difficult. I mean, I look at the distortions of President Obama. 50-some-odd% of the Republican Party believes that he is not a Christian. They believe that he's a Muslim. A large percent of people believe that he's born in Kenya or whatever else. And so you get all of these perceptions. And one of the problems for all of us, both in our individual lives as well as looking at other people, is how do we know, how can we separate the truth from reality when we are also inclined to hold on to our own self-referential idea of what is true? So I think it's a very difficult thing to be able to somehow find between somebody who knows a candidate personally for 50 years and what we see in the media and how we have to make judgments about this. And so some people will look at the same thing and see pandering. Other people look at it and see not pandering. But it's part of our system that we have this opportunity to have this dialogue to then make up our minds. Yeah.
I found this the most enlightening session. I really appreciate the juxtaposition of the cartoons, the caricatures as and then the personal perspective that you provided. This is one of the best sessions that I've been to at this conference thus far. And I've been a long-time follower of your uncle and his political career, and as well as your grandfather as well. I'm old enough to remember the 1968 campaign very, very vividly. But my questions on this, and I guess more towards you, Greg, but also you can come in on this. Two questions, sort of interrelated. Number one, Mitt Romney has been criticized somewhat. He's done a very good job, I think, in focusing on the major issue in this campaign, which is the economy. And I think he's been very effective in doing that on the positive side. But I think a lot of people are concerned because he hasn't laid down some specifics. I agree the economy's got some real problems and everything else. And I'm just wondering, once the campaign begins in the fall, do you see Mitt Romney maybe delineating some more specifics? And the other is a more general question, and that is, as Patrick Mason pointed out in his presentation yesterday, you know, the Mormon question hasn't come up that much thus far. Do you see it emerging as we move into the heat of the fall campaign, you know, after September 1st and that crucial period? Do you think it will surface and be used by either side? Those are the two questions.
No, we're going to, go ahead.
Just a real quick summarization for both parts.
Okay, should I just quickly answer those? Yeah. I can answer both of those. The first one is, absolutely, it's going to be more clear. In fact, he's written them. You know, he released a 69-point and 150-page book on what he would do to generate jobs in the economy, which he distributed at the beginning of the primary season. Unfortunately, that's too much detail, and people don't read that and refer to it. So once he's the nominee, and at the appropriate time when the campaign believes that the American people is ready for it, Mitt has so much detail that he can share and so many specific plans that he will absolutely share those, and he has shared those. There's an ad talking about they'll do the first day in office and so on. As to your second question about the Mormon question, I think we can all see what Obama's approach will be. Obama is trying to do one thing. He's trying to attack the character of Mitt Romney, which is quite ironic, because you can agree or disagree with his policies, but one thing is pretty unassailable from my perspective as his character. But that's what he's trying to do, and he'll use his Mormonism, but he'll do it in an insidious way. And he won't do it directly. The campaign can't afford to do that, the Obama campaign. But they'll plant seeds, and you'll see things coming out through the media that will be calling into question this odd fellow who's wealthy and out of touch, and who comes from this strange religion. I think that's going to increase in intensity through the fall.
Let me just say one final word. I think that one of the most interesting things about being in this, for us, I said yesterday that I didn't think when I was a young man I would live long enough to see a black president. I didn't think I would live long enough to see a Mormon, let alone two candidates for president. I said I still didn't think I would live long enough to see a gay general authority, but maybe. But one of the things that I appreciate about Greg is being able to give us that personal perspective. And Greg, I don't know, you ever have any plans of running for public office in Utah?
Not in my plans.
Well, if you do, I think you've won over a number of potential voters here today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.